accession number 20310, reel 3.
But they had a sort of a really
Major Knott, Reel 3. Can you tell me how you came to be in the Malay Regiment, please?
Well, we were, I was serving, we'd been serving in Austria, southern Austria, for over a year, 18 months I think it was, with our second battalion. And the battalion in November of 1949 moved down to Trieste, which was a free port at that time. And it was a wonderful station. Our barracks was right up on top of a big hill. And Joan was with me still at that time. We were given a flat right on the waterfront of Trieste, which was the most beautiful situation. I never forget, about 200 yards from the big fish market, and of course we got some of the best fish we've ever had there. We were only there for, going ahead of myself a bit. Joan was pregnant at the time, and she had our second baby in February 1950. Born at the local British military hospital, but unfortunately there was a problem and one lung didn't inflate, and our poor baby only lasted 3 days. And we were so terribly distressed, naturally, I mean, anyone would be in that situation. And I think I was even more distressed when I realised that I had to arrange for baby's burial in the local British cemetery at Trieste, which had been going on for many, many years. And I had to collect this sad little coffin, a little white coffin, with a friend of mine, one of my brother officers, in a jeep. He volunteered to come give me a hand, and I made arrangements for the grave to be dug, and we took this little coffin up and placed it in the grave, and our padre came and said a few words, and that was it. It's one of the things I'll never forget. But shortly after that, I think our CO, who was a very, very fine man at that time, had arranged to me to be posted to a different place so that we, you know, wouldn't have the memories going on all the time. And posting came through to the Malay Regiment. I had mixed feelings at the time because I'd already spent 4 years in the Far East. Wasn't all that keen to go back there again, but being seconded to what was then a colonial regiment was a good experience. My dear CO and another officer from our regiment who was higher up in the command at Trieste, between them arranged an almost unheard of thing for Joan to have an accompanied passage up to Malaya. Normally, whoever it was went to wherever it was, and your wife followed on 3 or 4 months afterwards. But that was quite a thing. Mind you, on the troop ship going out, it was pretty basic because I was in a sort of large cabin for 16 of us, and Joan was in the same with a lot of wives and children and all sorts. So we just sort of met for meals and spent time together, but we were apart for, and the whole voyage, I suppose, took about 3 and 4 weeks. So we went through the Med, through the Red Sea to Aden. We stopped at Aden. I think some got off, some people got off there, and I felt awfully sorry for them because Aden's a really horrible looking place. It's all rock and sand, and that's about it. Then we went on to Singapore, and from when we disembarked, we were put on a train to go up country to the Malay Regiment's base at Port Dickson. We were warned that the train is quite often shot at. I don't know what, there's nothing you could do about it. I just told Joan if anything, any shooting did happen, just to keep lying low and keep our daughter, who was then 2 years old, keep her beside her, protect her as much as she can. That's all we can do. But luckily we got through that journey without any shooting. I left my beautiful camera under my pillow on the train because we were such a hurry getting off, and it was still dark. But still, that went west. And then I was absorbed into the Malay Regiment. We were given a sort of brief language course. We got to know a few words. I could always easily pick up a language. I was just lucky in that way. So I suppose I learnt maybe a bit more than the others. And then I was posted to the 3rd Battalion of the Malay Regiment, which was based in Kota Baru, which is, I believe, now a beautiful seaside resort on the coast, very near the Siamese border. And that was our base, and that place was lovely. But then I found we were on operations about 30 miles further south in the jungle. And I was, the CO told me what was going on and so on, and he said, well, having looked at my record, I said, well, I'd like you to be our tactical adjutant. Oh, I said, and what does that entail? He said, well, he explained that he had one adjutant back to look after the base, which was quite a big affair with lots of families there, Malayan families and British families and so on. And he said when we moved down to our operations part, come with us, and we moved down. We had to go by boat down a river. It was the only sensible way of getting to this place, which was in the middle of the jungle, a place called Gua Musang. We got there and set up shop. As tactical adjutant, it was extremely interesting because we had our companies operating in various parts of the jungle, and occasionally they'd come in for a bit of a break. All our communications were by radio, so we got pretty used to that. That was an incredible experience, but just occasionally one of the companies would manage to catch some of these bandits. All they could tell us was, oh yes, we shot some bandits, and then we went back to where our position was and all the rest of it. So we said, well, are you sure? Any idea how many you shot and things like that? Well, they were a bit vague about it. Well, the next time they did an ambush, they came back to our battalion headquarters. One of them was carrying a sack, one of the soldiers carrying a sack. To prove that they were actually shooting people, they'd cut off one of the body's heads and brought it back and stuck it on a tree stump. Oh, God, I think we all felt sick. We didn't query what they were doing much anymore after that. But the Malayan soldiers were very good. I mean, they were wonderful in the jungle. They were very happy-go-lucky sort of people. At least 20 or 30 in our battalion were princes of one sort or another, because the royal families were enormous. When we were back at our base in Kota Baru, we used to be invited. If the Sultan was having a reception, all the officers would be invited to it, and we'd go along. And it was just like the King and I. All these, and the Sultan's family had the most wonderful costumes on, very decorative. And all the wives were kept in a sort of curtained off part, with a sort of a filmy curtain there. And all you could hear was all the chattering going on. They weren't allowed to join us, of course. But great experience. We were very glad that we'd been there. And we had two of the most beautiful beaches within easy reach of where our base was. And mostly we worked from early in the morning, about 7 in the morning, till about 1 o'clock. 2 o'clock thereabouts, and then we'd be free and go swimming the rest of the day if we wanted to. And of course, the family thought this was great. We had a really good time there, except when we were away on operations. Our last operation place was down in a place called Mersing, which was in Johor Bahru, which is very near where the causeway is to go over into Singapore. And we had, some experiences down there. One was terribly sad. One of our officers, British officers, a captain, was on patrol in the jungle nearby. And they routed out a bandit and chased him. And he shot from behind a tree and killed this officer. And all I got was a message over the radio from the Malay radio operator who said, Tuan Palmer Banyasakit, which means he's very ill. And I thought, oh my goodness, something's happened. I got in a vehicle and went off, and he directed us to where it was. I got there, there was a lorry beside the road, his company lorry. And I said, where is he? Oh, he's in there. And he was in there, dead as a doornail. And I wasn't prepared for that. I was shattered. So I had to inform our base, our adjutant at the base, about it. And he had to go and tell his wife. And he had four children. It was terribly sad, the whole thing. That was the worst thing that happened. The other bad thing that happened in Mersing, which was again on the coast, was that our very good medical officer went swimming one day and dived off some rocks into about 2 feet of water, and he broke his back and had to be taken to hospital in Singapore, which again had to be escorted because you didn't know who you'd meet on the way. I went down with him, and a scout car we had an escort. And he said, I've got to be kept as still as possible because if my broken bit cut my spinal cord, I'm finished. And so, you know, the medical orders in the ambulance did their very best with him. And we got him to Singapore Hospital, and he survived all right, but he had to be sent home, you know, right away after that. Apart from that, it was continual patrolling, which became somewhat boring in the end, because things were dying down then, rather. Anyhow, we got through it. When my time was up after 2 years, I went back to Kota Bharu to collect Joan and our daughter Linda. And we got on the train. We flew to Singapore, because they started flying us about by then. We flew to Singapore and had to wait a couple of weeks in Singapore for our boat. And that was a wonderful time. Singapore was a fascinating city. It still is, I believe. Our daughter's been there recently. Mind you, it's totally changed. They brought us back photographs, and there are high-rise blocks all over the place because there's not much room on Singapore Island. But when we were there, it was the most beautiful city, and we went to Raffles Hotel a few times for the experience. And funny enough, our daughter and husband, who were on a cruise there in February this year, the crew stopped at Singapore, and they went to Raffles Hotel, and they phoned us up from Raffles Hotel, which was rather wonderful. Quite a connection.
What was the soldierly quality of the Malays like?
It was good. They were fine in the jungle. They were very cheerful. But they had a sort of a really happy-go-lucky attitude. Nothing bothered them very much, I don't think. But they were good soldiers, and I enjoyed serving with them. Yes, I'm glad we went to Malaya, and you remember the good parts. Mostly the bad parts are still there and come up occasionally.
What were the bad parts?
Well, I told you about one of our officers being shot, killed when we were at Mersing, and then seeing our medical officer in such a state. Life in the sort of jungle bases, the first base that we were at, could get very boring. Apart from the interest of the operational side, there was nothing to do there whatsoever. Nothing whatever. We just had to make our own amusement. We were quite happy there. We were invited to a Chinese New Year party. Their New Year comes about February, thereabout. And they said we were going to have a big dinner, and they wanted us to come along because we were doing so much to help them and all the rest of it. There was a big Chinese population in Malaya, quite a big one. They run most of the business and things like sawmills, that sort of thing. And we went to this party, and oh my God, it was terrific. Except that they asked what we'd like to drink. We said, well, we'd like a whiskey and a tumbler like that. They didn't just put some in the bottom like that, they just filled it up with whiskey. And so we'd have to go very carefully through this meal. If you took a few sips out, they'd come and top it up again. And I suppose we just managed to survive. The meal was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And we managed to get ourselves back to our beds at the end of it. We all had headaches in the morning.
Where was this?
This was a place called Gua Musang, which is about 30 miles south of Kota Bharu, right in the middle of the jungle. There was quite a community, a big community there. Named Gua meant rock, and there was an enormous rock just above the place where we had our camp. But as I say, there was very little to do there. However, well, When time came for our boat home, we were all very glad, really. That was over. We went back to England, had a nice long leave of about 6 weeks or thereabouts to recover. And after that, we then only had one regular battalion going, and that was back in Germany at a place called Wuppertal, which is in the Ruhr near Düsseldorf, and funnily enough, Krefeld, where I stayed as a youngster. So we packed up, we drove ourselves across Holland to this station in Germany. And we're given married quarter there, which was very nice, and that newly built house, lovely, central heating and everything. And we had about a year and a half there with the battalion, till the battalion was posted home. Now, let's see what happened then. It was posted home, and it had orders to go to Korea. And I went for an interview with the commanding officer. I said, I cannot go back to the Far East again. I said, I've done two operational tours there. I don't, another operational tour in the Far East would probably, I said, I'd like to avoid it if possible. So he suggested, he said, well, they had letters round from the War Office, asking for volunteers for the Royal West African Frontier Force. Oh, I said, well, I wouldn't mind that, because I knew one or two of our officers who'd been seconded to them. And he said, right, we'll make an application, and I'll put it through for you. So that went through, and after this very nice time in Wuppertal, We went out to Sierra Leone, which of course is very much in the middle of the news now, isn't it?
Yes.
And that was to the Royal West African Force Sierra Leone Regiment.
What was it like there?
Well, we lived up on top of a hill, and it was lovely. We had a nice bungalow there, servants. West African, Freetown, well, Sierra Leone soldiers, I should say. But they were sort of a mixed sort of lot. They made good soldiers. They were fine, but they spent most of their time thieving. That was a, sort of the local pastime, stealing.
The soldiers did?
Yeah, from each other, from local inhabitants, from the rest of it. And stealing was quite a thing. It was, most people seemed to do it.
What were they taking?
Money, equipment, clothing, any old thing.
Did you get anything stolen?
No, luckily. The bungalows all had what was called thief wire put up, which was like a diamond crossed wire over all the windows so that no one could get in, and we were okay. But that was the only drawback. I enjoyed serving with them, and I had a wonderful sergeant major. He was from Ghana, not from Freetown, and he didn't think much of the Sierra Leone soldiers, and used to give them hell at times if they didn't do what he thought they should. But he was a fine man. He really was. Incredible man.
What was his name?
I don't know if I can remember it now.
Well, it'll probably come back to you later.
It might well do, yes.
But could punishments put a stop to the thieving?
Well, they were punished. They were given confined to barracks, CB and all that sort of thing, and it would maybe die down for a bit, and it'd come up somebody else. And they had a funny system whereby a group of them would pool their pay and maybe two or three of them would have lots of money for that time, and the others just survived, just about survived. And then during that time, when they didn't have much, they sort of pinched from the others. It's the most peculiar system. But they lived like that. They were completely inoffensive people. It was a strange business. I suppose we got used to it after a bit, and company orders would mean some cases of thieving would come up, or someone wanted to go back to his village to see his witch doctor because he wasn't very well, and the only person who could cure him was his witch doctor, and it seemed to work. all sorts of strange things unknown to known normal British soldiers. Well, the amount of married quarters, because when every recruit qualified as a full-blown soldier, he was allowed to get married. And consequently, each company had vast amount of the what were called married quarters. They were like sort of one room or one and a half rooms for the soldiers and their wives and children to live in. And that was part of the barracks. And about every 2 weeks, CO would come round and inspect the married quarters to make sure they were going on all right. We had more soldiers living in married quarters than actually in single barrack rooms. That was the situation. That's why it was sort of different from the British Army, where there were just probably a few married soldiers, and most lived in barrack rooms.
What would the CO be looking for in the married quarters?
Well, he'd go round just to see that people were keeping the place in good order, and that people the wives seemed happy and sort of reasonably well looked after, just to reassure himself, because it was such a big, it's like a huge village, really. And if you didn't go round every so often, things would get out of hand and become all rubbishy and untidy and messy. So that's what happened.
Did the army have any responsibility for the women and children?
Oh, yes. Yes, we had to make sure that they were properly looked after, and that they could go into hospital if there was anything wrong with them. Little things like that. I mean, the welfare for the Wyatt families was very good, really. We were invited to the government house in Freetown occasionally for receptions. That was quite an experience. We had two African officers in this regiment. One was a short service commission officer, David Lansana, and then there was another one who had just completed his course at Sandhurst, came back to the Sierra Leone regiment. He was a nice fellow. I went to, my wife and I both went to David Lansana's wedding. He was a short service commission officer. I went to his wedding, which was again quite an experience, and all the flowers there and the costumes and everything. But I think it was about 2 years after we left Sierra Leone, we heard on the news that David Lansana had been involved in a coup and had been taken prisoner and was executed. And that was that. We rather felt that, having been to his wedding. But I think while we were there, we left. When did we leave? 1958, thank you. 1958, we left Freetown, came back to England. Independence was granted quite fairly soon after that.
How many years were you in Sierra Leone?
3 years altogether. We came home for leave halfway through. No, with myself, and we had two daughters then at that stage. And we came home for 3 months leave halfway through that tour, which was very nice. While we were there, I mean, things ran very well from the administrative point of view in Freetown. There was corruption. I mean, we were always hearing about it, and it was reflected really in the soldiers stealing from each other, I suppose.
What type of corruption would you hear about?
Within the bureaucracy, customs official would take money for letting things go through customs that shouldn't go through. Anyone making an application, land application or something, would have to pay over some money before it was approved. Things of that nature. But the